Well, welcome once again to our virtual panel of the Court of Appeals. This is our March panel. We would typically be sitting in Norfolk and or Lincoln for this panel, but due to circumstances, we'll continue to do this via WebEx, hopefully for just a couple more months. I am pleased today to be joined by Judge Frankie Moore from North Platte and Judge Rico Bishop from Lincoln. I'm Francie Reedman from Gretna. We have three cases on our panel today. The first one is State versus Howard. And if counsel is ready to proceed, you may proceed. I just want to remind you before we start, though, that our, even though we're via WebEx, we are being live streamed and we are also being recorded for archive purposes. So to the extent you have any personal or sensitive information that you want to keep confidential, just keep that in mind as you make your argument. And so with that, we are ready to proceed. If the appellant is ready, you may begin.
Thank you. And I would like to reserve 2 minutes for rebuttal, if that's possible.
Okay.
And may it please the court and counsel, Ms. Duffy. We're here for the appeal of appellant John Howard, who was denied a evidentiary hearing on his verified motion for post-conviction relief. That motion was timely filed by a previous counsel and for Mr. Howard, and the district court in Douglas County denied such without a hearing. The district court also did not hold a records hearing, did not certify records, and the state did not file a motion to dismiss or an order for show cause hearing to dismiss the matter. The appellant's brief laid out first various instances in which trial counsel was deficient during the trial, various instances of appellate counsel who was different from trial counsel, their failure to allege certain errors to this court, as well as certain, I think there were 16 allegations of failure to investigate by trial counsel and present evidence to the court. As this court's aware, to prove ineffective assistance of counsel, there's the two-prong Strickland test. And in a post-conviction proceeding, an evidentiary hearing is not required when the motion, the verified motion, does not contain allegations which, if proved, constitute an infringement upon the appellant or the movement's constitutional rights, when the motion alleges only conclusions of law or fact, and when the records or files affirmatively show the defendant is entitled to no relief. I want to start by looking at the failure to properly cross-examine MH, which is the victim in the case. This court and Mr. Howard's original appeal from the trial court's or from the jury decision found the record was insufficient to address this issue on direct appeal, therefore preserving it for post-conviction relief. Trial counsel failed to properly cross-examine MH about allegations of inappropriate touching by her grandfather. She testified at trial that she did not disclose allegations made against the appellant because she was not comfortable telling her mother such things. However, trial counsel knew of a specific instance in which MH immediately told her mother about her grandfather inappropriately touching her. This contradicts the testimony of her stating that she was uncomfortable telling her mother, since she told her mother something very similar with a different individual. Trial counsel was deficient in not questioning MH about this inconsistency, and further ineffective for improperly trying to impeach this testimony through a different witness, namely appellant's then wife. Since this case had no physical evidence, the allegations that were brought forth and that the appellant was tried on were allegations that were approximately 11 years late report for the named victim SH and approximately 15 years late for the named victim MH. So of course there's no—
Mr. Jacobs, may I interject here? Would you agree that there was a significant amount of cross-examination of this victim witness at trial?
The district court in their order indicated that there was a significant amount of cross-examination at trial. And this will go into part of the issue I have with the district court's order, Judge Moore, is that the district court did not certify the records, did not hold a records hearing to admit the bill of exceptions as an exhibit. It denied this court's ability to review the record de novo because the district court failed to certify and failed to have that records hearing where that bill of exceptions was made an exhibit.
Is that record available to us, and was it available to you at the time of your motion for post-conviction?
The record that was provided by the clerk of the district court for Douglas County did not have that bill of exceptions in there because the district court did not certify it and there was no records hearing to enter that as an exhibit. So I personally received it from the counsel who drafted the verified motion for post-conviction relief, but there was no indication of how to get that record before before this court of appeals due to the district court's failure to certify that as part of his decision, or failure to hold the records hearing in order to mark that as an exhibit and for this court.
Was the bill, well, was this case previously before the court on a direct appeal?
It was.
And the bill of exceptions was provided at that time to this court, is that correct?
I believe so, yes.
So is this court then able to review its own records, including prior appeals and bills of exceptions contained therein?
That I don't know, honestly, Judge. What the Torres court, the Nebraska Supreme Court, indicated is that the Glover procedure used to certify the record when making a decision to hold a records hearing or to have the state file a motion to dismiss or a order to show cause, that court indicated it's to facilitate appellate review. Appellant believes that the district court's failure to do those things makes it harder for this court to be able to, you know, to facilitate that appellate review, because in this case, it would have been much easier for the court to certify the bill of exceptions and attach that to his order, or indicate that he's attaching that to his order and making it available for appellate review, or to simply hold a records hearing in which Glover set out, where the parties admit the bill of exceptions as an exhibit, or in I think Glover, it might have been depositions of the witnesses when a hearing was granted, or by the depositions of the witness.
But Mr. Jacobs, doesn't the district court in this instance make specific citations to the record, the bill of exceptions?
The district court did make specific citations to the bill of exceptions, yes.
So we are able to review exactly where the district court was looking to support its reasoning.
That's correct, yes. The, as I indicated with the failure to properly cross-examine MH, appellant believes that there's no reason for trial counsel to not properly question MH about this. He instead waited to try and improperly impeach MH through a separate witness, and this led to the inability to get that evidence in. As I indicated, this was a very late report of a sexual assault with no physical evidence occurring. And appellant believes that due to trial counsel's deficient performance of not properly cross-examining MH about this, it shows a probability that is sufficient to undermine the outcome in the jury's verdict. This would have...
Could you, Mr. Jacobs, briefly jump to, I see you're getting into your rebuttal time, so could you jump to the Dr. Neuring issue that you've raised?
Yes. Appellant believes that Dr. Neuring should have been called by trial counsel to testify. I understand the state's position is that the evidence or the testimony of Dr. Neuring may have not been allowed. However, because of, in part, what Dr. Loftus testified to, Dr. Neuring's testimony would have been based on, would have been geared towards various biasing factors that were present in the interviews. Appellant believes this would have, that he would have been able to testify to this without making an opinion as if they were present or not. He could have testified that these are the biasing factors that are present, and the jury, in reviewing the evidence for themselves, could have been the ones to determine what weight to give those interviews based on the biasing factors that may or may not have been present from Dr. Neuring's testimony.
Was there a motion in limine filed regarding his testimony?
I believe there was an oral motion in limine. I don't believe it was filed as part of the transcript, and I may be confusing that with the order, because I know there was a motion in limine, and I believe either the motion was oral or the order was oral, and I can't remember which one off the top of my head, Judge. And with that, I would reserve the remaining time for rebuttal. Thank you.
Thank you. Ms. Duffy?
Good morning. May it please the court, counsel, I'm Siobhan Duffy, Assistant Attorney General, appearing on behalf of the Appellee, the State of Nebraska. The state believes the district court correctly denied the motion for post-conviction relief without an evidentiary hearing, and we ask you to affirm the judgment of the district court. Just to kind of give a roadmap for this court and counsel, I will begin with the procedure used in this case, touch on the cross-examination of MH as appellant did, and then move to the Dr. Neuring issue, pending specific questions about other issues from this court. Briefly, the arguments regarding the procedure used in this case, as noted in brief, the state believes that the district court's order made clear the files and records it reviewed when ruling on the motion. The order referenced the Bill of Exceptions, as well as the judge's notes, the entries of the case on justice, and the opinion from the direct appeal.
Ms. Duffy, how does the district court get the record, the Bill of Exceptions from the direct appeal in front of it if there is no records hearing?
Well, Your Honor, I'll be very honest. I am not really sure. And as you were discussing with counsel, the record in this case it was filed with the clerk of the Supreme Court and clerk of the Court of Appeals. And I was able to review it in preparation for my brief. And I know it doesn't happen by magic, but I'm not sure how it got, from the district court. In kind of anecdotal experience, I believe that the clerk of Douglas County District Court probably had it. And it's possible the district court requested it from them, but I don't know for sure. So I realize that I don't have a satisfying answer for how the district court got it and then how it got to this court, other than that it did. And we know that it did because it is, appellate counsel was able, or I was able to review it, and the district court in its order clearly reviewed it because it cited to various portions in the Bill of Exceptions. And as noted in brief, the Nebraska Supreme Court has explained the procedure in Glover was to facilitate appellate review. And in Torres, the Nebraska Supreme Court stated that it was plainly evident from the court's order in that case, which files and records it had relied upon, that they existed before the successive post-conviction motion was filed in that case, and that there was no need to remand for a formal records hearing. And we believe that to be the case here, that from looking at the district court's order, we know what the district court reviewed because it discussed it in the order. And so we don't believe that there's a need to remand or that there's a need for a formal records hearing because this court is able to make its de novo review based on the same record that the district court looked at in making its determinations.
Ms. Duffy, is it a problem that the court requested the state to file a motion or response and it did not do so?
Your Honor, I don't believe so. And the reason is that regardless of whether the state, filed a response or filed a late response, or it had not filed or if it had not been ordered to file a response, the district court had an obligation to review appellant's post-conviction motion and determine whether it alleged a violation of constitutional rights, whether the records and files affirmatively showed that appellant was entitled to no relief. So it had a duty to review those claims, regardless of, the state may have filed a response and the district court may have completely disagreed with it. The court had an obligation to review it regardless. So I don't believe that it creates a problem for this court in its appellate review. Regarding the claims, substantive claims raised by the appellant in the motion for post-conviction relief, and specifically on the failure to properly cross-examine MH, This claim, as well as appellant's claim of the failure of trial counsel to investigate and properly present those 16 kind of subclaims, all really relate to the credibility of MH as well as the other victim, and in some instances, appellant's ex-wife, or the believability of the claims of the victims. And generally, just the state believes the district court was correct in denying these allegations without an evidentiary hearing. The victim's credibility had been significantly challenged before the jury. The jury still found that they were credible witnesses because it chose to convict appellant. So again, you know, while the information specifically about MH's reporting to her mother, some touching by another family member, I believe the state noted in brief that that occurred when she was older. And so, you know, whether MH felt comfortable reporting that years earlier her father had inappropriately touched her is a different sort of claim than as an older child, or, you know, as a teenager, immediately reporting touching that occurred just then. So the state believes that the district court was correct in denying that claim, as well as the claims of failure to investigate, because the victim's credibility was already an issue before the jury. Moving to appellant's claims that trial counsel was ineffective in failing to call retained defense expert Dr. Neuring. The state believes, as noted, that appellant has failed to show that portions of Neuring's testimony would have been admissible, specifically the testimony related to the biasing factors that were specifically present in this case. I believe appellant's motion noted that Dr. Neuring was prepared on page 60 of the transcript, that he'd reviewed the materials pertinent to Howard's case to include the investigative reports, depositions, counseling records, and transcripts and videos of the victims, and he was prepared to testify within a reasonable degree of psychological certainty that there existed several potential biasing factors present in regard to the statements made by MH and SH about the sexual assaults they claimed that the appellant had committed. And then appellant notes in his post-conviction motion that the biasing factors tend to negatively impact the reliability of statements and testimony by MH and NH, and then in parentheses, and anyone else claiming to be a victim. So the state believes that based on appellant's motion, it seemed that Dr. Neuring would have been testifying specifically to these victims and whether their statements were reliable, which invades the province of the jury. And so we believe that that portion would not have been admissible. So trial counsel was not ineffective in failing to call Dr. Neuring. As it relates to kind of just some general testimony that, you know, I believe some of the issues that Dr. Neuring, based on the post-conviction motion, would have raised would have been about a victim, maybe if they believe their story, doubling down on it when they're presented with information that maybe contradicts it. And the state believes that the defense expert that did testify, Dr. Loftus, who is a specialist in memory and specifically false memories, really presented appellant's theory of the case to the jury, which was that MH falsified her allegations, that she manipulated SH into doing so, and that while SH may believe her story is real, it actually was not. So we believe that the jury was presented with this theory, and they didn't believe it. They chose to convict appellant. And so we do not believe we believe the records and files affirmatively show that appellant is entitled to no relief on this claim, and so the district court was correct in denying it without an evidentiary hearing.
Are you aware what happened with regard to the motion in limine?
Your Honor, I was also trying to find out from this court while you were discussing with the counsel for the appellant.
It's so mysterious.
Yes. On page 43 of the transcript, the footnote, the district court notes that when discussing the hearing, so on page 43, the district court notes that the court held a hearing on the motion in limine by the state to bar Neuring's testimony, and that the state's argument to prevent this was based on State v. Craven, a decision from this court. And the footnote notes that the hearing was not included in the Bill of Exceptions. However, the judge's notes reflect a hearing was held on February 23rd, and the state's argument in support was based on Craven, and the notes indicate that the state filed a motion in limine on that same date, but the document does not appear on Justice. And in the judge's notes from Justice, there is kind of a lengthy entry, and the entry is made on February 27th, and it notes that on the 23rd that this matter came before the court on that motion in limine. And so I don't know if it actually was written and filed. I don't think that we know that. But I don't think that that's a problem for this court because as noted, the state believes that the certain portions would not have been admissible, and the portions that would have been admissible, there's not a reasonable probability that it would have affected the outcome in this case. And so we believe that, I understand there's some confusion and that's not comfortable, but I don't think that it's a problem in this case.
So do we know whether there was an offer of proof made with regard to Dr. Nearing's testimony?
Your Honor, I don't recall from my reading of the record that there was. It's very possible that I'm not remembering it properly, but I don't recall that it was there. But I guess that could also be it was made but not recorded, although I would assume it would have been recorded if it had been made. So I'm not sure on that. I see that I'm getting close to the end of my time. Unless there are additional questions from this court, we request you to affirm the judgment of the district court. Thank you.
Thank you. I believe Mr. Jacobs has about 30 seconds, 27?
25 seconds, Your Honor.
25 seconds. You may begin your rebuttal.
Thank you. And I just want to focus on what the state said in State versus Torres. State versus Torres was based on allegations of time barred successive motion for post-conviction relief. The allegations in Mr. Torres's appeal were not allegations based on evidence that trial counsel failed to present, failures to call witnesses, or failure to investigate certain claims. So for those reasons, I don't think Torres applies, and I would ask the court to reverse and remand this hearing.
Thank you. Your case is submitted, and counsel, you're free to sign off of WebEx.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you.